evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
Goma is under foreign occupation by the Rwandan Defense Forces, the official army of Rwanda, our neighbor. Indeed, we have seen after days of intense fighting a presence of the M23 and the RDF.
The foreign minister of the Democratic Republic of the Congo says the eastern part of the country's largest city, Goma, is under foreign occupation.
We find it is quite conspicuous and suspicious that the day they finally come to court, these bodies are purportedly, they find the three bodies and they're able to identify one, and later on, I think the second body as well has been identified.
The Law Society of Kenya is demanding explanations from the police over allegations of kidnappings and extrajudicial killings.
World Neglected Tropical Diseases Day, as you know, is a day that's observed every year on January 30th, and it's really a pivotal moment to mark the efforts that had been achieved, but also really looking at how we can use it as a key moment to be able to advocate.
And the NGO Speak Up Africa is calling for unity to help eliminate neglected tropical diseases. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Therese Kayikwamba Wagner, the Democratic Republic of Congo foreign minister, tells viewers Roger Muntu of the French to Africa service that Rwandan defense forces are occupying Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's largest city, Goma. She also says that M23 rebel forces, together with Rwandan forces, have gained control of much of the city after days of intense fighting. But Kigali says it does not directly back the M23 and it operates in the Eastern DRC only to protect its territory from the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, the FDLR. Kigali accuses the DRC of fighting alongside the FDLR. It's an ethnic Hutu force that has attacked Tutsi in both countries and took part in the 1994 genocide in Rwanda.
Goma is under foreign occupation by the Rwandan Defense Forces, the official army of Rwanda, our neighbor. Indeed, we have seen after days of intense fighting a presence of the M23 and the RDF that have now gained a large control over a majority of the city of Goma. When it comes to the death toll, because the situation has been so volatile, but also because the M23 and the Rwandan army have an interest not to depict and to allow the world to see the brutality of their attack, it is still very difficult to have a firm estimate of the number of deaths that that have resulted in these days of an onslaught. We need to differentiate also in the fact that there were a lot of deaths linked to the fighting, but also many deaths linked to the fact that Rwanda very purposefully sabotaged key infrastructure in the DRC. They cut off the electricity, they shelled hospitals, and they also cut off the water. They cut off airport supply lines, and they also cut off road supply lines.
Does your government, Her Excellency, view this as a failure to defend a major city that is Goma? How do you explain this setback, and how did this happen?
Of course, it is a setback, and it is an infuriating setback. I will not shy away from saying that. We need to acknowledge the fact that, and this has been reported for the past months, if not years, Rwanda has invested massively in arming itself and arming the M23 in eastern Congo. They have invested in weaponry of a sophistication that was unknown until then in the region. Weaponry that has been so performing, if you want, that even the United Nations, at a briefing to the Security Council, clearly said that they were outgunned. We have to also be cognizant of the fact that Rwanda violated at many occasions the ceasefire that had been negotiated through the Luanda process and put in place on August 4th by using technologies such as GPS jamming, which means that the whole aerial navigation in and around Goma was completely neutralized, if you want, because of GPS jamming. It meant that military supply routes were in great difficulty, but also humanitarian support and civilian administration. So we should not shy away also from being cognizant innocent and recognizing the fact that there has been an immense investment of Rwandan resources to wage this war so relentlessly. And also, and you know, a willingness of Rwanda to do so with extreme brutality and with no consideration whatsoever of the human loss and the human cost of this warfare.
Therese Kayikwamba Wagner is the Democratic Republic of Congo foreign minister. She spoke with VOA's Roger Muntu in Washington. The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights report warning parties in Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo are using rape and sexual violence as a weapon of war. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Human rights officials warn the incidence of rapes and sexual violence against women is increasing as hostilities between Congolese armed forces and M23 rebels, allegedly supported by Rwanda, expand towards South Kivu. This follows M23's takeover of Goma earlier this week. Jeremy Lawrence is spokesperson for UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk. He says the use of rape and sexual violence against women is not a new phenomenon. He notes it is an appalling feature of the conflicts that have been raging for decades in this region.
The numbers, sadly, will likely be higher because, as we know, in past conflicts, often for reasons of stigmatization, could be for social, cultural, or personal reasons, many women may not report instances of this. So the grim story is, figure is, dare I say, higher considerably.
Reports indicate M23 has progressed further south towards Bukavu, the capital of South Kivu. The UN Human Rights Office reports bombs have struck at least two camps for internally displaced people since the start of this crisis. The agency also has documented summary executions of at least 12 people by M23 between January 26th and 28th. Lawrence notes M23 fighters have occupied schools and hospitals and forced IDPs out of camps in other areas under their control in South Kivu. He says the rebels also have forcibly conscripted the civilian population and subjected them to forced labor.
Our office has also documented cases of conflict-related sexual violence by the army and the allied Wazalendo fighters in Kalahe territory. We are verifying reports that 52 women were raped by Congolese troops in South Kivu, including alleged reports of gang rape.
In a statement today, High Commissioner Turk warned of a further deepening of conflict-related sexual violence if hostilities continue to escalate. He condemned the widespread proliferation of weapons in Goma and called for investigations into the commission of violations, stressing the importance of holding perpetrators to account. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
17 UN peacekeepers have been killed this year in clashes between M23 rebels and government forces in the eastern DRC, including three killed within the last week. The UN peacekeeping mission in Congo has been criticized for failing to halt the regional violence, and last year the DRC requested the mission's withdrawal. With M23 now seizing the city of Goma, observers will be watching the mission's next move. For VOA, Mohamed Yusuf has more.
The United Nations says three peacekeepers were killed last weekend in the fighting around Goma, one from Uruguay and two from South Africa. More than 300 UN peacekeepers have been killed since the mission in Congo was deployed in 1999. The deaths of peacekeepers have renewed questions about the future of the UN mission known as MONUSCO. The Congolese government has requested the mission's withdrawal, citing its failure to prevent attacks by the many armed groups in eastern Congo. Philippe Unji is a member of parliament from South Kivu province and a member of AFDC party, which is allied to President Felix Tshisekedi's ruling party. He says they are waiting to see how the United Nations handles this latest conflict. I think the UN peacekeepers have helped to protect the civilians, but it is not enough, he says. We are watching the United Nations meeting in the U.S. over this matter, and the decision they are going to make will tell us whether they like Africa and DR Congo. We are telling them we are watching their next move. Unji says they want to see action taken against Rwanda, which Congo, the UN Secretary General, and many other observers accuse of supporting M23. Kigali denies the allegation. Rwandan President Paul Kagame sees the conflict as a Congolese internal problem that needs to be addressed. He has blamed Kinshasa for supporting rebel groups that want to interfere with his country's security. Meanwhile, the deaths of peacekeepers have created diplomatic tension between Rwanda and South Africa. International relations and diplomacy expert Kizito Sabala says the violence and tension will increase pressure on the UN mission to withdraw.
I think the calls for its withdrawal will intensify, and it is going to convince everyone that really MONUSCO's time in DRC is long overdue.
Addressing the UN Security Council on Tuesday, Vivian van der Peer, the Deputy Special Representative for Protection and Operations in MONUSCO, said the mission remains important in addressing the conflict and humanitarian situation.
Despite the significant challenges, MONUSCO continues to play a vital role in this crisis in the eastern DRC and has proven to be a beacon for myriad vulnerable groups seeking protection. However, the mission is challenged in ensuring the safety of its staff and premises, which has been severely impacted by the heavy direct and indirect fire used in these last few days, and to address the logistical, human rights, and humanitarian challenges we are all facing to ensure the mission's continued effectiveness.
The peacekeepers are mandated to protect civilians and humanitarian workers and support the Congolese government's stabilization and peace efforts. Sabala says the mission has a role to play in stabilizing the Central African nation.
We always see that there is always conflict going on, and I think they owe the international community and the region an explanation to why this is happening. Is it about their mandate? Is it about their facilities? Is it about their equipment? Because I think that explanation will serve to help the region and the international community to see how best to address the problem in DRC.
Experts warn that M23's capture of Goma could start another extended period of instability and, in the worst scenario, a third Congo war. The previous conflicts in the late 1990s and early 2000s caused widespread destruction, displacement and food shortages, leading to the deaths of several million people. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
In Kenya, the country's law society is demanding explanations from the police of allegations of kidnappings and extrajudicial killings. The group says it is committed to pressuring law enforcement to provide Kenyans with information about those who are involved in the alleged crimes. In a press statement signed by its chairperson, Faith Odhiambo, the Law Society says it is the responsibility of the police to tell Kenyans about issues of insecurity across the country. The demands follow denials in court by Inspector General of Police Douglas Kanja and Director of Criminal Investigations, or DCI, Mohamed Amin, about their knowledge of recent disappearances of three citizens. For more about the demand for accountability, I reach Faith Odhiambo. She is the chairperson of the Kenya Law Society.
For us, the thing you cannot confidently then tell Kenyans that we are safe. Because if this is going on and it's the same police, we find it's quite conspicuous or suspicious that the day they finally come to court, these bodies are purportedly, they find the three bodies and they're able to identify one, and later on, I think the second body as well has been identified. So for us, we are demanding answers. The responsibility and the backseat stop to the National Police Service. They have been charged with that duty and responsibility to investigate and tell us who is behind it. Because if they're saying they do not know, then who should know? Should Kenyans take the law into their own hands and do their own investigations? Or this is a job that they have taken, having full knowledge and capability and capacity, and also using state resources. And hence, we are demanding that they must investigate, they must tell Kenyans. If it's not them, then who?
The government has come out to say that it is not involved in the abductions and disappearance of Kenyans. The Kenyan police says they are not involved and that investigations are underway. Wouldn't you give them a little bit of time to complete their investigations?
Well, this is the same pattern that they have been adopting ever since. And we have seen also in the other habeas cases that the law society has filed, either those the abductees miraculously are released a day to the day they appear in court and the very day that they are appearing in court when they have been summoned to come before court. And this is a pattern that has been able to abuse from the various cases that the law society has taken up on behalf of members of the public who have been crying for law society's intervention. And therefore, by dint of what's been going on, we've been able to, you know, establish and it's our point that either they're not doing enough or they don't want to do enough. And we've seen these same patterns. We can say investigations can go on forever. And in our country, unless people are held accountable, then there's no action. Because had it not been for the court's standards demanding the presence of the head of the National Police Service, then these bodies, whether dead or alive, there would have been no closure to these families to be able to know where their kin is. And unfortunately, the day that they have come to court, we have the dead bodies have been discovered.
Now, Faith, talking about accountability, some Gen Z protesters are saying that they welcome the call by the Law Society of Kenya and that perhaps court cases that will put pressure, additional pressure on the police to come out to tell Kenyans that they are safe is part of the process of accountability. Where do you stand on that?
I agree with it, and that's why we have continued to urge our members to continue taking up pro bono matters to bring before the courts, because we need to hold them accountable. Today, as sadly again, some of the cases that have been brought, we had the baby Pendo case as well that was had in court, a situation of a case that has been dragged for 7 long years. Even the Gen Z protest cases that we continue to pursue, there's no justice to it. There's no investigation. There's no arrests that have been done. Even for the ones that Gen Z were able to identify, police officers that were shooting directly at protesters, they have not been summoned. There's no investigations that are being done. And for us as a country, even when you hear the head of IPOA saying that, no, we cannot investigate because the police are denying that they're not being involved, It sends a chill to the country and to the nation that unless undue pressure is placed, then the institutions are supposed to be independent, that are supposed to carry out their work, that are supposed to give answers, will continue to pile up mysteries and give this same narrative that we are still investigating.
Where do Kenyans go from here in this quest to know who is behind the abductions and extrajudicial killings?
Kenyans should continue to agitate and demand for accountability because someday they're going to drop the ball and we're going to be able to discover the names and the faces behind these abductions and behind this extrajudicial killing. It's unfortunate that we have regime comparisons, people talking about the bodies in Yala River that we've never gotten answers to. And in this regime as well, we have the deaths of the extrajudicial killings, the abductions, as well as the Gen Z deaths that are still a stark reminder of the chilling event earlier last year on 25th and the surrounding days within the protest. But I would say that as citizens, what we have been able to see is also a bit of more vigilance, more a sense of community alarm for members of the public coming out strongly when they see attempts for abductions. Members have tried to thwart, members have tried to record and share information, which have been able to save others from abductions and also have been able to help in investigations. And so as a citizen, I think it demands us now to be more vigilant, because if our own National Police Service are telling us they do not know who's doing the abductions, then it's time that we also take some level of awareness, greater awareness amongst ourselves, and not take things for granted, because that video recording, that picture, that sounding the alarm can save someone's life.
Faith Odhiambo is the chairperson of the Kenyan Law Society. She spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Still in Kenya, Gen Z protesters say they are displeased with what they say is the lack of information from the police about the disappearance of citizens. This after saying that the police appear not to be carrying out their constitutional mandate to maintain law and order and protect citizens. It comes after the police denied involvement in the disappearance and extrajudicial killings of citizens. The government says investigations are underway. Robert Mwangi is a Gen Z activist and protester. He tells me that the youth of Kenya are now petitioning international institutions to help stop what he says are deadly human rights violations.
First, our reaction is that we are very disappointed by the authorities. And by the authorities, we are talking about the head of the DCI and the head of the police commission. Why? Because first they were summoned to the court and they never went. They've been summoned quite a few times, but they have not appeared. But today they appeared. But now the problem is, as much as they have been summoned, every time they are asked to release the people who are abducted or to say where they are, they're not saying anything. They can't prove even whether those people are alive or not. So that's our concern.
I understand some Gen Z protesters are demanding an investigation into the disappearance and extrajudicial killings. The police are saying they are investigating. The Kenyan government are saying investigations are underway. Where do you stand on that?
Well, we all know that there's no investigation that they are doing. There's no way police can investigate their own police. So if at all there is any intervention that is going to be done, it can't be done by Kenyan police as we know them. So there's no way that they can investigate themselves. They already know what is happening. They are aware of everything that is happening.
What is the situation on the ground now regarding the issues of disappearances and extrajudicial killings?
Well, there's so much tense mode because every day we see that there's a young person who has been abducted. Four young people are recovered, bodies were recovered because they've been missing from last month. And today they were found dead. So there's a lot of tension going on and there's a lot of fear because every time you talk about government, you are always afraid of your life. You don't know what's going to happen next to you.
Are you saying that the police are not doing their jobs as mandated by the Constitution to maintain law and order and to protect civilians?
It's not just the police. It's about the government. The government is not following the Constitution as it mandates. Remember, Constitution gives people the power. That means it gives you the power to be accountable. It gives you the power to question the government. Gives you the power to tell them that they are not doing right. But right now, the moment that you speak up about the government or question anything, your life is in danger. So yes, the police are breaking law, but it has come from the government itself.
Where do Gen Zs go from here now? You've entered into a series of protests. What's the next line of action?
So what's happening right now is that there's a lot of civil disobedience. Remember, this fight started in the streets. And right now, people have started changing tactics. And we've seen Gen Zs now they are attacking those politicians on social media. When they started doing that, they started getting abducted. Now they've gone to the next level, which is reporting and writing emails to international countries and telling them what is happening in the country. So a few weeks ago, the president had traveled to Saudi, and the Saudi High Commission was filled with so many emails from Gen Z's complaining of the president and the things that he's doing to the young people of Kenya.
Robert Mwangi is a Gen Z activist and protester. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. In Zambia, three churches have agreed to strengthen the country's electoral processes to deepen the democracy. The churches include the Council of Churches in Zambia, Evangelical Fellowship of Zambia, and the Zambia Conference of Catholic Bishops. The religious groups underscore the importance of their role in advancing inclusive political institutions and upholding civil, political, economic, social, and cultural rights. For more on the agreement and expectations of the religious groups, I reach Reverend Emmanuel Chikoria. He is the Secretary General of the Council of Churches in Zambia.
We created what is called the Christian Churches Monitoring Group so that we have a long-term program of monitoring elections as opposed to just being active in the election year. Prior to that, would be active during the election year. But we realize that actually elections are determined by what happens before, during, and after election. And so just to appear in the final year of elections is not good enough, because actually, according to our research, rigging may not really take place during the election day because there are too many eyes. But how registration of voters occurs, how the issuance of NRC's national registration card occurs, you know, the campaign atmosphere, the way the public media behaves, all these are things that influence the outcome of elections, and they happen long before the election day. Hence, the Christian Churches Monitoring Group, a consortium of the CCZ, EFZ, and ZCCB. And so today we're just putting to paper the understanding that we've had. We've been working together on a number of areas, and so we have a document that just informs our consortium. It's called the Memorandum of Understanding. Thank you.
What are the expectations of this agreement moving forward?
It's basically cementing what I would say we've had a brotherly arrangement or sister arrangement. So we are just basically ensuring that there's a guiding document to it that binds all of us who are in this consortium to ensure that we are not going to do anything that will undermine our collective work, but also something that formally informs what we do, who we are, and why we are there. And so basically, we are there just like we did in 2016, we did in 2021. We are there to protect the Zambian ballot. We are there to enhance transparency, to ensure that there's transparency, to ensure that relevant reforms in terms of electoral laws take place. We are there to ensure that we build confidence in the Zambian voters that their ballot will be protected and democracy will be protected from any person that would want to manipulate the process through rigging or any other means.
How will you carry the people of Zambia along in actualizing this objective?
When you talk of ZCCB, you talk of CCZ, you talk of EFZ, you are talking about a very considerable portion of the Zambian population. And so we have our secretariat, but we work through our local structures. And so we have localized teams on the ground that are prepared. We participate in education, awareness raising. We announce, denounce violence, and we call for peace. We call for unity. And also, as the church mother bodies, we also promote dialogue. And we have not shied away from that. And we will still be working in the background, trying to make sure there's an atmosphere that enables all Zambians to participate in our political activities without let or hindrance. And so we do issue statements. We provide trainings for those that will work directly as monitors. But also we join other stakeholders, like the Zambia Law Development, to try and see how we can contribute to, you know, having laws that are going to help us be better in managing our elections and enhancing our democracy. So basically, we reach out to the public through statements, but we also try to raise awareness. We also work towards promoting unity and dialogue in addition to monitoring the elections. And so I think through these activities, we believe we have the backing of the Zambians, the buy-in of the people. When we are absent, our absence is felt. In fact, CCMG is a model in Africa and maybe worldwide. It's unique. It's something that people envy. And so with that kind of reputation and the convening power we have, we are able to carry all the well-intended Zambians.
Reverend Emmanuel Chikoya is the Secretary General of the Council of Churches in Zambia. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Cameroon, the local youth corner, a civil society group, is calling for a peaceful and transparent electoral process. This after calling on the country's youth to take part in choosing leaders to administer the affairs of the Central African country. Local Youth Corner is also calling on the youth not to engage in politically related violence, irrespective of the outcome of the coming general election. This after launching a youth-led initiative called Harnessing Opportunities for Peaceful Electoral Process, or HOPE. For more about the call for peaceful elections, I reached Jude Atefo. He is the program's coordinator of the Local Youth Corner.
This project is actually a 12-month project, so our objective is trying to ensure that Cameroonians have peaceful elections, like election that whatever the circumstances, whatever whoever who is voted as president, whoever who we have as the candidate, our focus as Local Youth Corner is to ensure that we have a peaceful election. So this is actually a project which is aimed at raising awareness, sensitizing young people and persons to be able to embrace peace, no matter the results of the election. So this is basically what the project is all about.
Since the program was launched, how has been the reactions of the country's youth, particularly in conscientizing them about their participation? Because there is always this issue of voter apathy among the country's youth, but the youth complain that things are not going well. So how do you engage them?
For the moment, we have not yet directly engaged the young people. Obviously, the project, one of the things that we are currently doing is be able to mobilize the necessary stakeholders, especially stakeholders from the civil society, from the government sector, and, stakeholders in general to be able to for the buy-in of the project. So from there, we are going to move to the second stage of the project, which is actually to be able to create, visibility materials on sensitization. And so we are not actually already at that phase where we are able to measure maybe young people's reception to the project. We're seeing the first phase, which is because the project actually began in October. So we have to, in our normal processes, October to January, we are still at the level of stakeholder engagement.
Talking about stakeholder engagement, are you involving ELECAM, the Elections Cameroon organization, as part of this program?
I think talking about that is also something, it's also, how can I put it, it's one of the things that we are actually looking at doing. Because let's be clear, our role is not about, influencing elections in one way. What we're trying to say is a peaceful election. That is our focus. So yes, we are also looking at bringing ELECAM on board to be able to ensure that we carry this all along. Because one thing that happens is the fact that in a project, you have to be able to identify project stakeholders. And project stakeholders are people that could contribute positively as well as negatively to the project. So you have to be able to bring them on board to be able to, tap from maybe their experience and everything, and to also ensure that you can be bringing a project that you can be coming in with a project that you want to maybe do something good, but maybe because of poor communication and poor involvement of stakeholders, your project rather turns out to be a spoiler. So it is, yes, we are looking at bringing in ELECAM in board and not try to influence ELECAM, but the role of ELECAM is mostly at the level of the advisory, especially to ensure that our project does not also, the messages in which we are channeling to the young people, they are not also being the messages that could be able to, bring uprising. Because remember, our focus is a peaceful election. So we also have to be ensured that the messages that we are sending out are not messages that could also be. And now we are working in a context where the Ministry of Interior is very hard, especially concerning the fact that 2025 is an electoral year. It's very hard on organizations. So yes, for this project to be able to go successfully, you have to, at a certain level, involve them. But now you are not involving them. They do not have, maybe they do not control the quality of how you go about your project, but they are just involved to be able to give you the authorization, the necessary authorization to do whatever thing you have planned to do.
Jude Atefo is the program's coordinator of the Local Youth Corner. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. In Senegal, the NGO called Speak Up Africa is calling for a united effort to help eliminate neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs. This as the world marks this year's NTD Day. Yassine Djibo, founder of Speak Up Africa, says the organization has launched an initiative called Go Beyond. It aims to create a community movement to encourage better prioritization of NTDs, increase investment, and a more person-centered approach to NTD solutions. Experts say the world is now halfway through to reaching the World Health Organization NTD Roadmap 2030 target of 100 countries, eliminating at least one NTD by 2030. Djibo says Speak Up Africa is committed to building an Africa where growth and a sustainable development are driven by Africans. For more about what Speak Up Africa is doing to help the efforts to eliminate neglected tropical diseases, I reach Yassine Djibo.
So World Neglected Tropical Diseases Day, as you know, is a day that's observed every year on January 30th, and it's really a pivotal moment to mark the efforts that had been achieved, but also really looking at how we can use it as a key moment to be able to advocate for additional funding as well as increased support for the various country interventions and regional collaboration, but also for us at Speak Up Africa, very much interested in also catalyzing community activation and engagement. And so this World NTD Day, we really decided to answer the global call to unite, act, and eliminate neglected tropical diseases with an initiative we call Going Beyond. And really the idea behind this initiative is really to be able to mobilize a diverse coalition of voices to really bring together artists, athletes, and those living with and affected by neglected tropical diseases, with a strong focus on women and youth, to be able to build a movement to encourage the prioritization of NTDs, to increase investment, and really reach many of our communities with key messages for NTD prevention and elimination. And so in terms of activities for World NTD Days, we have a series of activities in Senegal first, where we will be partnering with the Basketball Africa League. And really the idea is to work with them to ensure that young people are part of the conversation to prevent and tackle NTDs in their communities.
I was going to ask if these series of activities are part of the effort to ensure sustainability in the fight to eliminate these neglected tropical diseases.
Absolutely, yes. So what we're trying to do is really build that country ownership, because we know how important it is for that ownership to be at country level, not only to be able to have our various governments, you know, own the fight against NTDs, but also the communities being a part of those solutions and really being able to be a part of the response. And so for us, you know, everything that we do at Speak Up Africa is very much with that sustainability model in mind, in order to really be able to have a coordinated response from governments, from private sector partners, from communities, and for that ownership to be at country level in all of the countries in which we work.
What about the issue of awareness creation and education as part of this effort?
So that is also a critical part of the work that we do, and that's why also working with champions is so important, because a lot of the champions we work with are very popular with the youth, are very popular community leaders. And so being able to work with champions from across sectors really allows us to be able to raise awareness around neglected tropical diseases, which are often, unfortunately, diseases that are neglected and not necessarily known for many people. And so a lot of our work is also to ensure that the information flows. And that's why we also have strategic partnerships with media, and we leverage our champion voices to be able to speak up and to share the information. And we also partner with the Ministry of Health through their national NTD program to be able to ensure that we have the most accurate information that is in the language and appropriate context for the communities that we're trying to reach with this messaging.
Yasin Jibo is founder of Speak Up Africa. She spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. The 90-day pause on U.S.-funded foreign aid, along with a stop work order on existing grants and contracts worldwide, has been modified slightly to allow waivers for life-saving humanitarian assistance. Still, many people across Africa are in shock and worried about the potential impact. Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo looks into what these developments mean for U.S.-funded humanitarian and development projects in Africa and has this report.
Many in Africa are struggling to assess the implications of the Trump administration's decision to put a 90-day pause on its foreign aid worldwide. The administration says the U.S. spends about $40 billion in annual aid, and it's time to review and prioritize America's core national interests $1 at a time. Most development and humanitarian assistance is channeled through the U.S. Agency for International Development through various programs working with individuals, communities, organizations, and countries across the globe. Here in Kenya, while many organizations directly affected are keeping quiet, one employee agreed to speak to us on the condition of anonymity. We've slightly altered his audio to protect his identity. First, he says he's grateful for what America's aid has accomplished over the years.
We've been having success stories.
He's among the hundreds who received a stop work order. He says he's most concerned for the beneficiaries of programs he's been associated with over the years, as he's not sure what will happen.
These are families whereby they were anticipating that we could support them. This will stop. There are children that were HIV positive, and we always collaborate with their facility to ensure that they are virally suppressed. So now they'll be of high viral load. And in school setup, you'll find there'll be dropouts.
On Tuesday, the administration issued waivers on existing life-saving humanitarian assistance programs, including core life-saving medicine, which may apply to health programs such as PEPFAR, the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, which works with partners in 55 countries worldwide. One of them is South Africa, where 7.8 million people have HIV and AIDS. Asanda Goasheng is an independent political analyst from South Africa.
South Africa is the biggest beneficiary of PEPFAR program and has been for many years. It will also have dire consequences for people within the region, because there are some people from the region who come to South Africa to receive medication. So it is a medical disaster in waiting, effectively, and a humanitarian disaster in waiting.
Addressing a press conference broadcast live by the national broadcaster SABC on Wednesday, South Africa's health minister, Dr. Pakish Motsoaledi, said, depending on how much aid ends up being withdrawn, he hopes it will not affect the antiretroviral ARV treatments.
One thing we want to ascertain is that nobody must stop taking ARVs, because that will be devastating. It will be completely dangerous, as you know what happened. When you are on ARVs and you stop, there will be serious trouble.
Through PEPFAR, the U.S. has invested over $110 billion in the global HIV and AIDS response, saving over 25 million lives and preventing millions of HIV infections since it was established more than two decades ago by then Republican President George W. Bush, according to U.S. State Department data. There are also other programs that can't afford a funding break, said Dr. Akila Udoji, manager of Karoo Primary Healthcare Center, a Nigerian facility sponsored by USAID.
The tuberculosis diagnosis treatment, if that funding is cut off, it will greatly affect the program, because there will be no diagnosis of such cases. And then the medicines, people can't afford them. And if they cannot afford it, it will lead to serious outbreak of these diseases.
The U.S. Global Leadership Coalition and Advocacy Group welcomed the administration's review of foreign assistance programs in a statement, but expressed some concerns. Former CENTCOM Commander Anthony Zinni co-chair of a council of nearly 270 retired admirals and generals, warned that the freeze takes the U.S. off the playing field and could directly impact U.S. military operations overseas. VOA requested interviews with the USAID offices in Kenya, Nigeria, and the U.S., but did not receive replies before the deadline for this broadcast. Meanwhile, the 90-day freeze is already paying dividends, a statement released by the U.S. State Department said this week. It says the review has already shown that over $1 billion in spending not aligned with the administration's America First agenda has been prevented. That includes programs providing certain contraceptive services, climate justice, clean energy, and pro-abortion programs for young girls globally. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, music from African Collection, but first. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Automatically, I set my eyes on you. I know, say, you go fill the void my eyes for. Could you show I'm searching for living off lost love? Got my mind on a new one. Opinions coming in by the moon, no go in. I'll be damned if I let them in. They were jumping on your small ball, I get my faith, my bow. I get my mind on it right now, but they will fly out. Get happy, and you know I can't deny. Your body. Opinions coming in, but them all no go in. Opinions coming in, you know I can't let them in. Do, you can be stubborn, I'm never letting go. But I know my family living that life. We can chill and watch the sunrise. Play some blues and watch me dance funny. You can learn a step or two, honey. Keep on moving, you'll be that body. Jumping on your small ball, I get my feet humble. I get my mind on it right now. Humble, they make a flyer. Get happy, I ain't no, I can't deny. Your body is divine. Got no more, but really nice. I can't wait till you mine. Get happy, I ain't no, I can't deny. Your body is divine. Got no more, but really nice. I can't wait till you mine.
Do. Boko, boko, nanamai. Yeah. Manoji boko boko nanamai. Oh, Manoji yo. Manoji boko boko nanamai. Manoji, Manoji, Manoji yo. Manoji boko boko nanamai.
E no que yito a mene materoratio. A no se sende lo a wododora. E no que yito a mene materoratio. A no se sende lo a wododora. E do que America recala, wole kike a me misite wodo alo. E do que America recala, wole kike a me misite wodo alo.
Straight line of a roundabout. Stand confident, tall and stout. Man a military general, them a boy scout. Me tell them, Mano Gilo.
Mano Gilo.
For your don't want, you give me something, but I don't know what. Now you be the only one that I want. Girl, I didn't lucky for your don't want. Now me they call you, make you come out, come. Cause I get something I want to tell you. I'm all, but I know go talk out for fun. Carry me go where I don't know. You do me something you don't know. See, whether na chance, whether na kaya matter. Me I down for your matter, your matter. I grieve for you. Me I no get the choice. Wanna have kids with you. And they don't call my boys. Then they see me toys, toys. Say go, I grieve for you. But it no be my joy, see you rejoice. I grieve for you. Me, I no get the choice. Wanna have kids with you. And they dog on my boys. Then they see me toys, toys. Say go, I grieve for you. But it no be my joy, see you rejoice.
Go take another oh. Me and you never go fi day asunder oh. Now you oh, welcome make my dreams come true. You make me feel something. Oh, we started something. I want to see you when I wake up in the morning. No fight, no forcing.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Kwame Asante, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, he who thinks he is leading but has no one following him is only taking a walk. I'm your host, Peter Clotin, Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.